Donald Trump's refusal to release his tax returns became an issue in last year's election, and to this day, the media and the public have still not seen them, at least not all of them. New York Times reporter Suzanne Craig got her hands on a portion of Donald Trump's tax returns after they were left in her mailbox. Craig, who covered Albany for the New York Times for 2 years, will be back in Albany tomorrow to receive the first annual Nellie Bly Award for investigative reporting presented by the Museum of Political Corruption.
It was a Friday afternoon. I was actually on deadline on another story about Hillary Clinton. And the story was running Sunday, and I was walking around the newsroom, and I went to check my mailbox, which is not far from my desk. And there was an envelope in my mailbox with a couple other things. And this one was addressed from the address where the Trump Tower is. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it, even if it came from there. And I opened it, and inside were three pages folded over. And I unfolded them and took a look at them, and they were three pages of Donald Trump's 1995 tax returns. I obviously had no idea if they were real or not, but immediately obviously was pretty intrigued and went over and found my colleague who had been working on a lot of tax-related stuff to do with the then-candidate Donald Trump, David Barstow. And we just started poring over them and trying to understand, even before, you know, figuring out if they were real or not, just trying to understand exactly what was on the on them. And that day, which was a Friday, set off a mad scramble over 10 days at the New York Times to try and actually confirm whether or not they were real or not.
How did you confirm that they were real?
Well, the first thing we did is we worked very hard to understand what was on each line, just so that we could then, when we went out to actually try and confirm whether or not they were authentic, we would be able to have a conversation with the individuals who would know, and we'd be able to talk about each line and what we were seeing. And after in the process of doing that, we actually brought in two tax experts to go over them. Our inclination after that process is that we were on the right track, and there was reason to believe, just based on the information and some things that we knew about Donald Trump's finances at the time, that these, you know, at least had the potential to be real. But we were still a long way from that to getting them in the paper. Then we reached out to, there was three signatures on the tax return. There was Donald Trump, Marla Maples, Trump, his wife at the time, and the third signature was an accountant by the name of Jack Mitnick. We knew of Jack Mitnick because we'd been doing a lot of work on Donald Trump's taxes, and he had been a tax attorney and had done a lot of work for Donald Trump in the 90s. And we decided just to get on a plane and go down to his home in Florida and show up at his house. And David Barstow, my colleague, just knocked on his, actually didn't knock on his door, got to his house in Florida, and he's actually in a gated community, so we had to get the security guard to kind of hand the phone to us. And we talked, David talked to Jack and got him to agree to meet us the next morning at a coffee shop. And we presented him with the three pages, and he, without sort of, I think, going over the bounds of what he felt was his professional duty to Donald Trump, did confirm that it was his signature, and gave us enough comfort in some other things he said that we believed them to be true. And they were later confirmed that they were, in fact, three pages of the returns by Donald Trump.
What were on those returns? What kind of information did you take away?
Well, I mean, the significant information was that the losses that Donald Trump incurred in the 90s, which were huge, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars, actually allowed him, under the tax code, to shelter taxable income, you know, for 15, 20 years going forward. It explained a lot as to why Donald Trump hadn't paid income tax. Losses in the United States work a bit like a gift card. If you have losses, the government says, well, we'd like you to get back on your feet so you can use them to offset future income. And in the case of Donald Trump's, he has had at least four bankruptcies, and we know he's had significant losses. So that was sort of the main takeaway, was that he was able to use those like a bit of a gift card from the IRS to shelter future income and avoid paying income tax.
And there is still no idea who the deep throat was, so to speak, who left them there?
No, none.
Do you have any speculation who might have done it? Why you?
Nothing that sort of adds to the discourse. I mean, there's, you know, no. I mean, it's obviously somebody who'd been involved in his finances. It could have been somebody from the banks. It could have been somebody involved. Marla Maples obviously had access to them. There's been a lot of speculation, but I don't really have a great informed view of who it might have been.
You'll be getting the Nellie Bly Award for investigative reporting from the Museum of Political Corruption in Albany. What about investigative reporting? Is there enough of it today? Are the papers devoting enough time, the networks devoting enough time to just looking in, taking the time to do the stories that take the time?
I would say, and I obviously have a biased view, I'd say there's never enough investigative reporting, even, you know, President Trump in the last year aside. But I think that papers and networks since Donald Trump was elected president have committed incredible resources to investigative reporting. And, you know, I find it kind of heartening in this age, given the attack that the press is under directly from the president, who's you know, incredibly critical of both the media and has gone as far as to, you know, incite violence against the media. I think it's heartening, I think, to see just how much some papers are and news outlets are willing to put towards investigative journalism. But I think it comes also at an unfortunate time when there's so many cuts going on in journalism. You know, I am lucky enough that I work for the New York Times, and we're fortunate enough to be able to throw a lot of resources to this, but I think other papers are cutting back, and I don't think it's just when you look at it that it's, you know, just investigative reporting of the president. I mean, investigative reporting is incredibly important at all levels of government. I covered Albany, and I was the Albany bureau chief for the New York Times for 2 years, and when I was there, we had, you know, three people there, and I thought we could have had 10, and we never would have been fighting over the stories because there was so much to do. And I just think papers need to remember at all levels, you know, when they have the resources to try and, you know, really make a commitment to do not just day-to-day coverage, but to commit to longer term. But it's unfortunate, given the cuts in journalism right now, that that's not happening, and state houses are shrinking and city hall bureaus are shrinking.
Suzanne Craig of the New York Times will be in Albany tomorrow to receive the first annual Nellie Bly Award for Investigative Reporting, presented by the Museum of Political Corruption.